just the pure fact that the dollars affect our neighborhood, our end of town, more than most. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you all for your testimony this afternoon. Carla, the next three
are Tom Lewis, Steve Reinemer. Tom already spoke. Steve Reinemer, Catherine Thomason, and Caitlin Reed.
Mr. Reinemer. Hi.
Hello.
And that's all who signed up, but we've had requests from other people if they want to speak.
Ms. Thomason.
Ms. Reed.
And Ms. Reed. So Mr. Reinemer was first. Could you raise your hand if you did not sign up but you want to testify? All right. Could you give your name to Carla, please, while we're taking this last so we got your name for the record? Mr. Reinemer.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Hanging out here during this hot day. I'm with the South Tabor neighborhood and also on behalf of myself and Friends of the Reservoirs on occasion. I'm basically submitting a South Tabor Neighborhood Association letter that we submitted previously for another hearing. I'm just going to submit that again to let it reiterate what we've said on this issue. I may read a little from that, but I also just want to underscore what a previous speaker said. I think it was Mr. Steve Geiger, something like that, when he said that we need to see a more impassioned voice in defense of our water and our reservoirs. I am often thinking that a lot of people who have crawled out of the woodwork in the last few months wonder, you know, why this issue isn't out there. They're not up with it. They don't know what's going on. And I think, you know, it can only be addressed via legislative action or changing the rule in some way, I believe, and not just with a variance in the testing. To clarify what Mr. Geiger also meant when he referred to being dismayed by Senator Boxer's statement that a variance, he used the term variance, was dead in the water, but that it needed to be pursued, he said, of course. He was referring to the legislative or administrative action or the non-testing action, some sort of legislative remedy. He was not referring to variance testing. And I just say that because Randy's response included a reference to Randy's efforts to obtain the testing variance. But I talked to Mr. Geiger after he spoke, and he did in fact mean the legislative route or something like that. As far as this impassioned defense goes, I think of if any of you ever heard Montana Governor Schweitzer, who gave a rousing rebuttal to the federal mandates that added hoops to the process of obtaining driver's licenses. It was quite a while ago, but I heard it on NPR. And maybe you can Google it up, but that's the kind of response I'd like to hear from our leaders on this issue. I could picture him there with his cowboy hat when he was talking to the interviewer and waving it, and he was pretty worked up about not needing to comply with that. I also just want to say I support the resolution language that would include the legislative route. I don't see it there either, and it seems like there's no harm in having it in there. That's the thrust of what I was going to say. Do I have a minute left or not?
You have 30.
Okay. Well, I'll just...
No, actually, you're out of time.
Okay.
You're over 30 seconds.
I won't read from the South Tabor letter, but it's in there, and I want to just emphasize that it underscores the importance of maintaining the open reservoirs as well, which gets lost in this discussion somewhat, and that can only be remedied with some other resolution besides testing.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Dr. Catherine Thomas, and I'm with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Good to see you again.
And I know that I'm on the record, sent a statement on behalf of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility regarding our concerns on this topic. So I'm delighted that the resolution was altered to include UV rather than direct filtration, primarily based on cost. I'd like to underscore the concern still, of course, about UV, which are mercury lights, and that clear wells should be very closely looked at as an alternative with location siting at not the headworks but at Lusted Hill, and getting adequate information from other cities that have done UV treatment, which is only technology in the last 10 to 20 years, to find out what they do then with the water. Because if your clear well system is so large from headworks to Lusted Hill, what you do with that water and how you remove the mercury before you dump it is something that we really need to consider. And so building smaller, but still building clear wells or places where if a bulb breaks, the water is isolatable and then removed from the system is still a very significant issue that should be looked at carefully. And again, the other statement in there that's not considered in this resolution, but you may want to consider taking up separately, is that there still are some loophole, federal loopholes, and to encourage when we do visit our legislators to close those loopholes for further safeguards for the watershed itself would be very useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Hi.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Reed. I'm speaking on behalf of Food and Water Watch. Food and Water Watch is a national consumer organization working to ensure clean water and safe food. We're a membership organization and have an office here in Portland. We are presenting opposition to the plan to build a new costly both water filtration and UV system. We believe it is unnecessary and would decrease the quality of our water and believe that our system is fine as is. We are happy to see an amendment that doesn't break the bank for Portland citizens, yet the UV treatment is still expensive, and our water is pristine, thus seemingly unnecessary. We, like many others, urge you to primarily continue to pursue an exemption on the national level, whether through the EPA or through Congress. Additionally, we are requesting a delay by 1 month in moving forward either in the implementation of whatever decision you make today in order to continue to educate the public and multiply the amount of public comment that can be put in on this topic, to act quickly to adopt a way to purify our currently pristine water without sufficient public notice or input is imprudent, and full consideration must be given, and the public must fully be involved in any decision that will affect the quality of our water for many, many ages. So thank you very much.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Really appreciate it. All right. We have more?
We have four more people. The next three are Jesse Kamanish, Jennifer Claire Darling, and Eileen Brady.
And the fourth one?
The last one is Anandi Gefro.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Thanks for waiting. We appreciate you being here. So why don't we have that fourth person come up?
Anandi? Or is Eileen?
Am I
Eileen is here. Ms. Brady, all of you, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. Go ahead.
Thank you for having me. I'm Mayor Adams and commissioners. I know all of you, except I've never had the privilege of meeting Commissioner Fritz. People know me from my connections with New Seasons Market or Celilo Group Media. I'm Eileen Brady, thank you. Or the Health Fund Board. But I've been involved in many health-related and environmental issues throughout for a while. But I've had the pleasure of serving on the Independent Review Panel. Commissioner Saltzman put me on that many years ago, it seems like, and spent many hard months looking at this issue. And they said the experts were correct, and we were going to cover those reservoirs one way or another. It was a very difficult decision. 8 out of 13 people, the majority voted, obviously, to recommend to the council that we don't cover them and that we do fight the ruling that we knew was coming, and here we are in the middle of it. I would have to say, just at a philosophical level, I'm a Tom Friedman fan, and he says, pessimists are often right, but optimists change the world. And I'd like to see, I think what we're missing is just a little bit more leadership from the council itself on the kind of the will of the public not to proceed ideally with this. And when I look at the whereases, I don't see the intent here kind of at the big picture level that our intent is that this ultimately is not going to be built. Our intent is to respect the will of the people and the health of Oregon and the citizens. And this is an option. This is a precaution. This is something we're doing in case this occurs. If there's some language in there, but I don't think it's strong enough. And I really urge you to come out with a little bit stronger leadership, either by as an individuals or as a council on this matter. I would be happy to be part of a delegation that works on the legislative side of this equation, if that makes sense to you. So thank you for your time and your efforts.
Thank you. Hi.
Mayor Adams, members of the council, my name is Jennifer Claire Darling. I was born here and raised here, and I went away and I came back partly because of our incredible standard of living. I'm currently a West Slope Water District Bull Run happy consumer of our water. Very briefly, I'm a fairly newcomer to some of this information, but what I understand so far is that we do have science on our side. The most recent levels of crypto have been 000 for any human health concern. And the study that was just mentioned in testimony a few minutes ago, it's old, and Dr. Otzman of Multnomah County Public Health has stated that it does not apply to, it would have no bearing on human health effects. So it's really just not relevant. In terms of the resolution on the table, since we're all of a similar mind to protect our pristine water, I see no reason why we can't put back in the legislative option. I'm not saying you have to personally make any calls to Barbara Boxer or that anyone has to do anything, but there's no reason not to include that language as evidence that we are doing everything in our power and that we're all of a strong mind and united. Also, can we please codify the language in there that there will never be outside entities entitled to ownership of Bull Run water? This is definitely a commons, and we need to preserve it as such with the legislative language here in Portland.
I have that language being drafted as we speak. It will be the amendment.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Leonard. Okay, I think that's all I have to say. If it ain't broke, let's not break it.
Let's not fix it.
Well.
Good afternoon. You're the last speaker.
Thank you.
Two more, and then we're closing speaking.
My name is Anandi Geffro, and I'm a citizen, and I'm concerned about trying to fix something that ain't broke. I implore you to try to pursue the waiver and spend whatever you need to in order to do that. I basically feel progress, schmogress. Let's not try to build something that we have no intention of really building, or so we're being told. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Last two.
Are Jesse Kamanish and Mary Saunders.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Thanks for waiting, or if you just arrived, you each have 2 minutes, and we only need your first and last name.
My name's Jessie Kamanish, and I'm Regna Merritt's daughter. I grew up watching her fight to protect Bull Run, and I had an opportunity to visit Bull Run myself last Friday on the Water Bureau tour, and I strongly encourage any of you who haven't made it there to go see it for yourselves. And I want to thank you for taking the chemical treatment plant off the table. It's a great relief to me. And I hope that our water won't be treated with UV either, as it clearly isn't necessary at this time. My question is, can you commit to close the loopholes in federal law regarding human entry, loopholes that could be exploited if we did build any additional treatment plant? And can you commit to this in a modified resolution? We need the protection of the Bull Run Trespass Act of 1904 brought back to federal legislation. Will you amend this resolution to include the City Council's commitment to that? I also hope that the public is given more opportunity for education and discourse on this important issue before future decisions are made. And as you've seen this morning, even with very little notice given to the public, we care about our water. And we want it protected from human interference at the source and protected from unnecessary treatment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi, I'm Mary Saunders, and I'm speaking as a citizen and as a cancer survivor, and I oppose both a treatment plant, a centralized treatment plant, and UV treatment. I guess my statement of being a survivor sort of gives you a little bit of a hint why that is. I am not a cradle Oregonian. I was born back east, and I grew up near Washington, D.C., so I'm familiar with some of the practices back there, including building things that fix something that wasn't broken but that doesn't work, so needs more money the next year and then the next year after that forever. I don't want to see that sort of a mentality get here at all. The water is good by reputable testimony. There is no reason to risk impurifying the water, and there is no reason to impoverish our people beyond the cost we now pay, which is high for our water and our sewer. So those are really my central reasons. The other is that's unique about Oregon that I didn't grow up with is we have earthquake risk here. So a central processing place is going to have pipes in and pipes out. If they break, then what? We would be better off having testing facilities around the city, making sure the water is the same for everyone. And if the water it breaks in a neighborhood in an earthquake, then we can divert right resources to fixing the breaks while we are reassuring ourselves that the earthquake did not affect the purity of the water where it's still being delivered. I'm not an engineer. I'm just a person.
Well, we appreciate your testimony. I've never heard of the phrase cradle Oregonian.
Yeah.
That's a great phrase. I hope to be what, a graveyard Oregonian or something like that? Thank you for
your... I wish I were a cradle Oregonian. I wouldn't be so messed up, maybe.
Well, thank you both for your patience and your testimony. All right. Commissioner Leonard, thank you both. You just passed out another amendment.
Yeah, I'll read the following language and then move it. I would move to add an amendment, which would be a further resolve to item 1071 that reads as follows. Be it further resolved that it is the policy of the Portland City Council that the land and infrastructure owned by the Portland Water Bureau integral to the delivery of water shall not be transferred to or operated by any private entity or any public entity other than the City of Portland.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on council of this amendment?
I want to explain the specific language.
Sure.
After I got the Water Bureau, I asked for an inventory of Water Bureau assets, which, interestingly, they had never done, including an inventory of all the property they owned. It turns out there is property in places you could not believe owned by the Water Bureau that's not used for Water Bureau-related issues. So, for an example, one of those pieces of property is on Northeast. David, is it 136 in San Rafael where we're building the house?
No, it's 142nd.
It's actually directly across the street from Bonnie McKnight.
Oh.
And we have a parcel of land that has sat vacant surplus for years. It's a large lot. Instead of selling it to a developer who would have divided it into three narrow lots with three skinny houses, I took the opportunity to have the Water Bureau build what I can only characterize as a house of the future that takes advantage of every environmental achievement known to humans at this point so that we can demonstrate to builders and citizens that you can build a sustainable house that will sell and bring back and actually make money. We did that design in cooperation with the neighborhood, including Bonnie McKnight. The literal language of saying we can't sell any Water Bureau assets would prohibit us from selling that surplus property. So I just want to be real clear as to the reason for that language.
All right, unless
there's Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard, may I offer a suggestion? When we want something under our code, when we want something to be binding city policy, we need to add language in there that says this is binding city policy. That's under our Portland policy document section. I don't make friendly amendments, but that's just a suggestion.
What would the language have to be?
This is binding city policy.
All right, so move to add that to the as a friendly
second.
Amendment.
Does a second
in the appropriate
agree?
Place?
Yes, that's fine. I'm really very impressed that you and your staff, in looking at the language of this amendment, are thinking big picture all of the things that the Water Bureau does. And I'm wondering whether bringing this back as a separate resolution next week to make sure that that all the I's and T's are crossed.
I would be more comfortable with that. I also know there are people out here who are skeptical about everything that I do. So I was trying to do it as quickly as I could.
If you would be more comfortable, I would be.
Yeah, be happy to do that.
You've indicated your intent, and I think we try not to do things on the fly so that we do make sure that they're thoughtfully considered.
Okay.
Well, if I could add in that vein, I think I supported it until you said this would prohibit ever transferring surplus property to anybody. I don't think that's something I want to bind ourselves to.
I'm actually saying I wrote it this way so we could transfer. That's why I wrote it. So that it says integral to the delivery water,
okay.
Because surplus water property is not integral to the delivery of water. That's why I had that added.
Okay.
As one person on the city council, I would prefer to put this as an amendment into this resolution, and we can polish it in future council actions if we need to.
We can work on it for the next week and amend it again. That's fine, too. That's up to everybody here.
Some of the people left that testified who heard we were going to.
We think this covers it. I'll have Eddie and David get together and look at it again. And if it needs to be polished, we'll bring back something to amend this.
Mayor, I'm comfortable with that approach.
Okay. So we'll have a chance to vote on whether now or later on the amendment that has been moved and seconded. Carla, would you please call the roll?
The amended amendment.
Correct.
We're voting on this amendment.
We're voting on this.
As amended by the suggested language by our esteemed council.
Which includes this as binding policy.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I don't usually turn to Commissioner Leonard and say, do you want me to vote yes on this? But I just did, and the answer is yes.
Fish?
Wow. Aye.
Adams?
I can only hope one day Commissioner Fritz will do that to her life. All right, we're now voting on the twice amended council calendar item. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Well, I want to start out by thanking Commissioner Leonard and the Water Bureau for their diligent work on this very technical and controversial issue. The work session held with council last month, was excellent. It gave the most thorough overview of this issue and understandable that I've had, and I appreciate that. And I also appreciate the very thorough follow-up to all the questions that council members had at that work session with the notebook that was put together by the Water Bureau about a week ago. This is a difficult decision and one I know that all members of council and citizens take seriously. Our Bull Run water is some of the cleanest and most pure drinking water in the world. And we all know this and are rightfully proud of that legacy left by our predecessors. And I believe this entire council understands that the LT2 rule is an unfair rule that does not take into account the incredibly unique aspects of the Bull Run system. So if we all agree that in Portland's case, this is a regulation in search of a problem, then I believe we should continue to pursue all alternative options beyond a large capital project, pursuing the variance, legislative options. And again, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard and the Water Bureau for working so hard on these matters over the last 2 years. But if we must begin planning for a large capital project to comply with this rule, and I do believe we must begin that planning, then we should plan for the lowest cost method as the prudent step. And that's why I'm pleased to see the substitute to select ultraviolet treatment as the preferred option. This is by no means an easy call, and I do recognize there are secondary and tertiary benefits to direct filtration that direct filtration provides. I just don't believe that they outweigh the substantial cost difference of approximately $300 million. And I'd just like to quickly explain why. We've heard a lot about the need or the benefit of having additional drawdown capacity that would give us, in essence, 1 billion gallons of extra capacity. But that assumes we need this water now or any time in the foreseeable future. And I don't believe that really is the case. I think the present value of 1 billion gallons of extra water at this point is practically zero. There may come a day when that supply is necessary, but it's not here now. And I think we have the well field, which is an excellent secondary source of water for our citizens. So it's somewhat of a luxury to consider an extra 1 billion gallons when we know that Portland businesses and Portland ratepayers in general are under intense economic pressures. We've also heard about climate change, catastrophic wildfires, and how direct filtration can respond best to these risks. Again, the well field can provide the water we need in a catastrophic event in the watershed, and I believe the vigilance of our great staff, as well as that of the U.S. Forest Service, provides us the confidence that fires can be detected and promptly put out. And with respect to future regulations and direct filtration, perhaps being able to deal with multiple future substances or items that may be regulated, well, we do know that EPA rules such as this under the Safe Drinking Water, they don't happen fast. It's taken over a decade for this long-term treatment rule to actually be finalized and implemented. And nothing assures us that direct filtration will be the technology needed for these speculative regulations in the future. Pharmaceuticals and things like that probably are not going to be dealt by direct filtration any better than ultraviolet. So again, we should not spend $400 million on something that may be needed when we could spend $100 million on something that gets us in compliance with the current rules and does not limit our use of future technologies. I'd also just like to briefly touch on sustainability. I believe ultraviolet is the most sustainable option available to us. No water is generated that must be disposed, or no sludge is generated that must be disposed of. It will also utilize a fraction of the energy that a direct filtration plant would require. And as I said, the waste products, while not presently considered to be hazardous waste, I know from Bureau of Environmental Services that what's not presently a hazardous waste can indeed be designated a hazardous waste in the future and entail substantial cost for the disposal. So again, I think this makes the most sense at this time in this economy, and I believe that we are exercising due diligence in trying to continue to seek the variance, which we all support, but also recognizing that we need to also make the prudent planning to comply with this LT2 rule. And I want to again thank the Water Bureau and Commissioner Leonard for their leadership, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
Well, this has been a challenging task, balancing the my instinctive kind of reaction to get in and fight unfair things, but also knowing that I have to have a high degree of technical knowledge to be able to have the tools necessary to challenge those from the federal government that have much more knowledge on this subject than I have. And it's only because of these, particularly these three gentlemen sitting here, Eddie Campbell, David Schaff, and Michael Stewart, who have been the brains behind everything that I know and have articulated on this subject. These are consummate professionals, and they continue a century-plus-old tradition of fighting to make sure that not just this generation but future generations have the best drinking water in the world. And my hat's off to each of you. I greatly appreciate your dedication, your professionalism, and certainly the time you've spent with me, allowing me to have
the information I need to have intelligent conversations with a variety of different people who I need to be able to instant react to about why we think our water system doesn't need what it is the feds say we need. I appreciate this discussion, the debate of the council, and look forward to moving on from here and having this subject behind us as far as the debate. It has been very time-consuming and I know emotionally draining for a lot of the folks here in the audience, and I hope we can now get to the place where we're all working together for the same thing. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, I agree that we need to work even harder to get the variance from the EPA, and I keep a picket sign in my car. So I'm ready to, and a few hours' notice because I take transit now that I'm working downtown, but I count me in when we're marching on the EPA. And yes, I believe we should ask the federal delegation for closing the federal protection loopholes if any exist. And I thank Regna and Jesse for coming down and for delaying your family vacation to make sure that we got that point. A lot of people gave up a lot of time for this, and I appreciate it very, very much. We need to continue that to seek the variance process. And it was mentioned, well, there's no reason if we're going to move forward with UV to do that. There's 180 million reasons to do that. That's $180 million is what the UV treatment plant would cost with the debt service. That's still a lot of money. So we certainly have that incentive to make sure that we work as hard as possible to get the variance from the EPA, and I will do that. Thank you to Commissioner Leonard for his continuous hard work on this and for being such a leader and being willing to alter direction in response to citizen and council concerns. And thank you to Water Bureau Director David Schaff for his work and responsiveness to my office on these issues. Thanks to Patty Howard and Tim Crail and Tom Bizzo in my office who helped me figure out many of these issues. And thank you to the citizens of Portland who continue to amaze me and make me proud to be a city commissioner with your diligence, your passion, your intelligence. What an amazing discussion we just had with people who are counted as amateurs and yet are very versed on the studies and the counter studies and the issues related to this important matter that matters to Portland. It matters to Portlanders. We do care about our Bull Run water. It's part of who we are, whether we were cradled here or came here as soon as we could. The Bull Run watershed is very special to us. It's also special to our wholesale customers. And I appreciate the hundreds of people who sent me personal emails, not just copy and paste the talking points, but their own personal emails, including several of our water wholesale water customers from east and west of the city. So we're making this decision together, and that's really exciting to me. It's exciting to me how this council works together and listens to each other and considers different things than the way we were originally thinking we might go. I would certainly like not to treat the water at all. If there is a treatment, I support the least cost alternative, which I believe is ultraviolet. Ultraviolet treats cryptosporidium and other microorganisms, so we will be in compliance with the LT2 rule if we aren't granted a variance. And UV won't change the taste, and it protects the Forest DeFawcett branding that Portlanders are so proud of. And I'm very, very pleased with the way that this conversation has gone. Aye.
Fish.
Well, first, I would like to thank Commissioner Leonard, as well as Water Bureau Director David Schaff and his team for leading what I consider to be an exhaustive, thoughtful, and transparent process. And I want to thank the hundreds of citizens who wrote to my office or testified today. One thing we all agree on, whether we are environmentalists, craft brewers, businesses, or citizens, let me make sure I get this right, David, from forest to faucet, the Portland Water Bureau delivers the best drinking water in the world. And we want to keep it that way. Now, the scientific issues in this debate over the long-term to enhance surface water treatment rule are murky and complex. Cryptosporidium, cyanobacteria, and turbidity. Did I get that right, David? But the political issues are crystal clear. The federal government insists that we solve a problem that doesn't exist and further insists that we pay for this folly. This is regulation run amok, a one-size-fits-all approach to the Clean Water Act that treats Portland like it is the Milwaukee, Wisconsin of the Willamette. Portland already has one of the highest combined water and sewer rates in the country, and ordinary citizens are struggling to meet their basic needs during the worst recession of our lifetime. We need to fight this misguided mandate in every venue, including in Congress and before the EPA. And I am extremely grateful for the leadership, and I underscore that word, leadership, of Commissioner Leonard and Senator Merkley in this fight. The resolution before us, as amended, proposes a dual-track approach to LT2. Aggressively seek a variance from the EPA and simultaneously plan for the possibility that we are legally required to treat our water. In my judgment, the case has been clearly made that we need to pursue a dual track. And Commissioner Leonard is exactly right. We cannot bet the farm seeking a waiver and get caught paying millions of dollars in fines if we are not successful. Now, a number of people who contacted me urged this council to engage in what amounts to civil disobedience, and frankly, that is not an option. We each took an oath to obey the law, even laws which we disagree with. On the question of treatment options, my general inclination is to follow the Hippocratic Oath: do no harm. If we absolutely have to correct a problem that doesn't exist, choose the most cost-effective, least intrusive solution to the problem. New York City, San Francisco, and Seattle have all chosen UV. It costs around $100 million, one quarter of the cost of filtration. And it does not require the use of any chemicals, and it specifically cures the alleged problem identified by the EPA. In reaching my decision today, I have evaluated cost, impact on ratepayers, and benefits of each proposed treatment option. I have carefully considered the concerns raised by citizens who contacted my office. I have listened carefully to all the testimony, and I have made unreasonable demands on David Schaff's time. And I would be remiss if I did not say that as proud as I am to serve with Commissioner Leonard, I take great pride in serving with civil servants like David Schaff and his senior team. In my view, Commissioner Leonard's amendment strikes the right balance. Fight for a variance, but support UV treatment if absolutely necessary. Thanks, Randy, for the countless hours you put in working all sides of this issues to get to consensus. I'm proud of your leadership. And that leadership assures that we are all working together to protect Portland's greatest natural treasure. I vote aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to join with my colleagues in thanking you, Commissioner Leonard, for the amazing leadership in taking on this incredibly difficult task. Difficult politically, it's an incredibly technical issue, and from a federal and state regulatory point of view, I don't know of a more challenging public issue right now. We will keep our eyes open for any potential legislative fixes, but this approach does focus us on the variance, the regulatory variance, and that is where we need to focus our energy. That will involve our delegation. EPA can and will be responsive to our federal delegation, and we will need them as partners as we seek that variance. As has already been said, we're going to continue to fight like heck to have the federal government recognize the purity of our Bull Run water source. And we're going to prepare a contingency in case we lose. It is a contingency only. I want to thank the staff of the Water Bureau as well, the citizens that have testified today, and everyone who has weighed in on this issue. It's good to be moving in a direction of both fight and plan. All right, we are recessed until 2 o'clock.